This episode of The Sit Down is powered by Thrive Fantasy. The leaves are rustling, the temperatures are lowering, and football is here. I love gambling, I love fantasy, and I know a lot of you do too. Here at The Sit Down, we feel that our subject matter and gambling go hand in hand. There's a new app out there, though, that can get you involved in not only fantasy, but gambling too. Let me introduce you to Thrive Fantasy, the newest in prop-style gambling fantasy. Right now, by going to thrivefantasy.com or downloading the app wherever you get your apps, you can join for real cash prizes in multiple different sports, whether it's football, the NBA, when that's in season, soccer, or even cricket. You can get involved now by picking fantasy-style props each week, and whoever gets the most right wins the cash prizes. They have entry fees from $5 all the way up to $10,000. Be like me. Go to Thrive Fantasy and get in the game today. Week one, they had $100,000 in prizes. And as I said, they have weekly prizes every single week. You got Monday night games. You got Thursday night games. You got Saturday games. You got Sunday games. All sorts of great contests. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars are official sponsors of Thrive Fantasy. The LA Chargers are official sponsors of Thrive Fantasy. And so is the Sit Down Podcast. So be like me. And go get involved right now with Thrive Fantasy. Get the app wherever you get your app.
Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another edition of The Sit Down, a Mafia History podcast. Hope you're all having a great night wherever you are. And I got to first, right out of the gate, just say thank you for listening to the show. And especially after last week's episode, we got a great response from our Sammy Gravano show that we did. Obviously, Sammy is a hot button topic. He's still around, still doing his thing. And we felt it important to tell his story, and we did it, whether you wanted us to or not, we did it. And it was a great show. It was very well received. So if you haven't heard that, go check it out. Today, it's going to be a little less serious, a little bit more lighthearted. And I'm so excited for this show because, you know, one of the greatest works of art in the history of our country is, from an entertainment perspective, The Sopranos. And obviously, many of you know, the film is coming out in just a few days, October 1st, the many states of Newark. And I thought it was important that we do kind of a run back and kind of get our minds racing about the show again. I know we've all seen it about 60,000 times, but this is kind of our Sopranos show. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of some of the real characters behind the show. And that's the thing about the show. I don't know if there's any character that's about one that was kind of built off one particular person. That's what's great about the show. It was mostly made up, but it had parts of realness to it. We're not going to have Blackjack on today. And I talked to Blackjack and he was perfectly fine with not coming on. He'll be back next week. I'm excited to welcome in our guest this week. We have a great guest. She's a super fan and probably someone that knows either more about the show than I do or, you know, right the same amount. I consider myself an expert on The Sopranos. If you ask me about my knowledge, I would say it's 100. I know there are people that just like the show and they don't love it, but I love it. It's what got me into all this mob stuff many years ago. It's the great Stephanie Rosendorf Diaz. She's a super fan. And she was actually just on Talking Sopranos with Shrippa and Imperioli. It was great. You did a great job, Steph. How are you? The Sopranos Blueprint is a great blog. How are you today?
I'm doing well. And thank you for inviting me on. It's a great opportunity.
I'll just ask you right out of the gate. I mean, I'll kind of ask you a two-part question. How great is it to actually kind of return to the Sopranos ethos? Because it's really just over the last, 10 plus years, it's really just about reliving a show we've all seen. You know, we talk about the theories, but now we're actually talking about a film. Like there's newsworthy news. Like it's not just, you know, we're reliving old stuff. We're going to get new Sopranos content.
Well, what's crazy actually, and some people don't even, you know, believe me when I first tell them, but I actually did not watch The Sopranos when it was on the first time around. I actually only watched for the first time in March of 2020, which
no way. Really?
Yeah. And wow. So it, I only really like talked to a few people about that. Not that I necessarily hid it from anyone, but it was just, you know, it didn't really ever come up. And so it was kind of talking Sopranos was when, like, you know, everyone kind of officially found out, of course, because they asked me on the show. But I mean, when you mentioned 60,000 times earlier, maybe not 60,000 times, but probably a little bit less than that is the number of times that I've watched. So
you're saying in the last, let's say, you know, 16 months, you've become completely entrenched in the Sopranos world.
100%. I think in a weird way, it was like, it's been like a form of escapism for me when I first started watching, it was right around kind of when COVID first exploded in the US. And so I was at home a lot more and I just kind of randomly stumbled upon it. And then I literally like have watched it every single day since. And so I think it's been a really great way for me to kind of channel my energies and my kind of process a lot of complicated feelings that I think are displayed on The Sopranos that I think we all sort of go through, but maybe even more so in this particular time period.
Yeah, that's a great point. I kind of have a different, I've talked about this before. People all the time ask us on the show, like, how'd you get into the mob ethos? And we obviously do, you know, kind of the actual mob. We talk about the actual mob every week. But I remember when I was 10 years old, and I remember the exact episode it was. It was the episode, it was very early in the show.
When college?
No, it was a little before that. It was when Brendan Fallone and Chris steal the Comley trucking, the trucks and stuff. I remember sitting outside my parents' bedroom. They were huge fans. They watched every week. And I remember they wouldn't let me watch. I was only 10 years old. I mean, my parents are pretty, you know, they kind of let us watch what we wanted, but that was something that was on later. I was usually in bed, but I remember I would sneak out and I would sit there and I would watch the show. And I remember my senior year of high school was 2007, the year that the show ended. And I remember I loved the show so much, but senior week was the same week as the finale. It came out in June. And I remember at the time, I obviously wasn't going to cancel senior week, but I made my mother and father tape the show on VHS and bring it down to the Shore House to pick me up. And because we had a house at the time, we were at that house. And I remember I sat there and watched the show. I made them tape it. I made them bring it to me because it wasn't the same as now where you can get all the stuff online. It was a little different back then, but yeah, it's crazy how people get into it and just become entrenched in the show. It's just great. What are your overall thoughts of the film? Because, you know, I remember when I heard about it coming out and we kind of got a plot line and that sort of thing. We talked about it on the show. And I think one of the things that I said was I felt that it was a little bittersweet to me because I think one of the great things about the show and I kind of equate it as well to The Wire, because I think there are two shows that are just above everything else. And I know the creator of The Wire, David Simons, talked about they've asked him if he'd ever revisit The Wire world. And he says, no, that the show is perfect the way it is. And when you mess with something, sometimes it waters it down. And I felt like The Sopranos was one of those shows. But then I found out, well, David Chase is involved and, you know, Tony's son is playing him. And I just got all excited again. What are your just thoughts of the movie? I mean, were you into the episodes when he was like younger? Did you like those episodes?
So it's interesting you ask, because I kind of initially had the same thoughts, like, oh, maybe something, you know, it ended so perfectly how it was. And, you know, when you kind of touch it again, it kind of can, you know, you don't want to leave with that legacy. But then I felt better once I realized that it was that David Chase was involved with it. You know, I think there were a lot of things that I was looking forward to or hoping that I'd see. And of course I haven't seen it yet. I'll see it on October 1st, but, you know, over the course of the past year, reading more articles and interviews about it and kind of learning that it was more centered on Dickie. I remember when I first knew that it was going to be coming out this year, I kind of wrote down like a list of things that I was hoping to see. One of which was more of a kind of young Livia and her relationship with Johnny, as well as some of the others that we had heard that were involved with them back then, like even Richie and Janice, Ralph Cifredo, and Eugene Pontecorvo, and a few others that they had mentioned that had grown up with Tony or went to high school with him. I even specifically like the stick up of Fitch Lamana's card game. Yes. I was like, oh, I really, really, that would be like something really cool to see, because, you know, it's mentioned so many times, and it's like a, you know, especially Feach. I mean, Feach is hilarious. So just seeing like a younger version of Feach.
Oh, really? I talk about the Sopranos pretty freely on Twitter, and I've actually made a worst like low level character list multiple times. I hated Feach Lamont. I hated him as a character. But I would be fascinated to see him as a younger person, because they did talk about how he was like a legend, right? So, but there were a lot of those references, like, and if you're obsessive over, I think, the show like we are, like, there's a lot of random references. Like, remember Richie talks about Rocco DiMeo? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, that guy. And, like, Tony also makes a comment about when Christopher's whining about picking up the check at the steakhouse or whatever. He's like, do you know how many dinners I picked up for fat fucking Jerry Anastasia? And, like, these, like, random characters that were probably part of his father's crew, or, you know, just part of that crew that I just kind of want to get to know. And, you know, I did always find Johnny Soprano to be kind of interesting. Not that he'll be big into this film, but, you know, it's interesting to see how all this kind of figured its way out.
Yeah, well, and I think really, like, the kind of the father-son dynamic, because, you know, learning more and more about what the movie was going to be about, and kind of how Dickie stepped in as this father figure. It's just, you could tell there's so much, like, underlying resentment and baggage and skeletons and just, you know, things that are still unresolved and almost like unfinished business from their past. And that's kind of why also I never believed that it was Detective Barry Haidu who killed Dickie, right? But I guess we can get into that later. But I guess I felt like there's so much left unsaid and so much underlying resentment and just kind of yucky feelings between Tony and Christopher. And part of me feels like it was because Tony felt like Dickie, you know, didn't act there, wasn't there for him like he would have needed. So, and just Soprano Will DeSanti stuff always particularly interests me.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. And I think, you know, the racial aspect of this is interesting as well, because, you know, obviously, I think if you know anything about the Newark riots and the things that went on, I mean, Newark has a very interesting criminal history. I mean, even with the mafia, and if you know anything about, you know, the DeCavalcanti crime family, the family that they believe some of the show is based on, I mean, they were kind of created in Newark and in Elizabeth. And, you know, there was obviously in the black underworld, there were a lot of, you know, whether it was drug traffickers, you know, Frank Lucas, a guy that they made a film about, American Gangster. He was someone that did business in Newark. He was from that area. So there's a lot of undercurrent in the black community and obviously in the Italian community. And there's always been, I think, a resentment between each other. But and we also saw that as well in The Sopranos. Remember that some of the episodes with that the preacher that Tony does business with?
Oh, yeah, Reverend Herman James.
Yeah, so like his father, remember he like has a Coke with him in his like living room? And
he tries to like kind of like start kind of like showing that he's here for business. And then his dad quickly shut that down and was like, I don't know what you're here for, but like, that's not my thing. Yeah,
but he kind of alluded to that, like they had kind of issues with the Italians back in the day. And like, it would be interesting to hear like, maybe some of that's right. And it seems like this Harold character we're gonna hear from, who obviously has an issue with Dickie Moltisanti. But some of the characters, I mean, we're gonna learn who, you know, how kind of Tony met Big Pussy and Silvio and obviously Pauly. But there's an interesting character as well that I want to hear more about. Joey Diaz is playing an individual called Lino Bompensero. And from what I know about Lino, he's actually Big Pussy's father. So I didn't know Big Pussy's father was connected either. So
that is really interesting.
Yeah, there seems to be all sorts of new characters. But I guess one thing I will say, and there is someone that I've heard from recently that has seen the film, and they actually had to sign an NDA and that kind of thing. All they said was, if you like the show, you're going to absolutely love the film. So, and I didn't think I wouldn't. So I'm excited about it. And by the way, there is a fat Jerry Anastasia character. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, nice.
He's only been referenced once in this film, but or in this show. But yeah, he will be in the film. So I'm excited about that. But let's kind of talk about kind of what we love most, the show. And this is not, I know it's a Sopranos film, but it's going to be a little different than what we're used to. We're used to, obviously, And I'll be interested, Steph, in seeing where this film ends, because if it ends where Tony's still in high school or, you know, wherever, I would love to see another film down the road, maybe from then until the show. Because, like, there's a lot that, you know, Tony's kind of, and we'll have to ultimately see what we find out. But I wonder if there will be another film or something else.
Yeah, well, I think it was cool, because I know I saw an article that that David Chase has already been talking about, you know, another film. I'm pretty superstitious in that way. I'm always like, oh, let's not put the cart before the horse, even though not that I doubt that something that David Chase creates wouldn't be amazing. But I thought it was interesting that he noted that, oh, this is a gangster movie. And so I guess in a way, maybe he's just trying to prepare us for it not being like 10 different layers of things going on at the same time. But then maybe it is. I've heard mostly great things from people that love The Sopranos. I'm always just so skeptical. Like I think that's just my nature. I assume that something's not going to go well. And if it does, it's like, oh, that's really cool. But, you know, I just from reading about it and hearing what other people have had to say, it sounds like it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I will say, I think you make a good point about just it being a gangster film. I think we're so starved for that because, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, there hasn't been a really great gangster film for a while. I mean, look, I like The Irishman, you know, whether you did or not. I mean, that was the last one we've had. We've had these like goofy, like Capone films, and, you know, they had a Lansky film that came out, but we've kind of been starved because we're missing out on, you know, De Niro, Pesci, and Pacino are obviously getting older, and it'll be nice to have another gangster film around. But, you know, I want to ask you kind of, let's take it from the final episode of the show when the screen goes black. I'll just ask you quickly, when you watched the show for the first time, did you immediately think that your internet went out or something?
I did. I watched it with my husband for the first time, and he had seen it before, but he didn't ruin it for me, luckily, because I literally had no idea what was coming. I didn't want to spoil anything for myself. So I just went in completely, completely blind. But then I was just like, what? Like, this can't be.
That's, I think, everyone's. I still remember when I saw it. I remember I screamed. I said, "Mom, what's up with the TV?" And then the credit played, and then the taping ended. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's how they ended it. But I'll ask you, and I want to play a little game here. I want to kind of talk about, what does the Soprano family look like in 2021? Or let's say after the show. So I'll ask you first, what do you, Stephanie, think happened to Tony Soprano?
I think that Tony Soprano was shot and died.
Okay.
At the cut to black.
Because I've been pretty vocal is that I think that's absolutely ridiculous to think. I just don't know how it would make sense at all. But I guess you could say, well, I guess I'll ask you, like, why do you think that? Because I guess I'll ask, like, who would have killed him? Because he had made peace with the New York family and who was left. I don't think anyone in his own family would have did it.
Well, if you want to hear, if you go really on to the court theory, I think that someone in his family, Paulie Walnuts, I don't think Paulie did the hit or even that he thought of it, but I think that he knew it was going to happen and was okay with it because he was going to just go into business with the New York family. Like how when Butch, he said, we'll decapitate the head and do business with the rest. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what ended up happening
real quick. Obviously Paulie had made it clear throughout, you know, with the weight comment and some of the behind the scenes stuff, he was obviously someone that I think always was enthralled by New York and maybe felt like, well, how does this younger guy get everything over me? And I feel like I should be more respected. And there were some certain points where I don't think he felt respected enough. So I guess that's plausible to think. I mean, maybe him and Patsy Parisi set it up. But I feel like if Patsy, I don't know why Patsy would do it, just because his son was about to marry Tony's daughter. And I feel like that would have set him up well as far as being part of the family. So obviously what Bobby became by marrying Janice. But I guess my always thought with the mafia is, I feel like everyone plays by the rules. And I feel like David Chase wanted to make this authentic. And I just don't feel like killing a boss of a family in a well-lit restaurant with people everywhere in front of their family would have been the way that. And I'll tell you this, Steph, if that was true, I think that would severely hurt the show's view in my eyes if that happened. I mean that. If that would have been seen on camera, I would have severely downplayed the show. I would think it would have hurt the show a lot. I mean that.
Right, yeah, I think what, and of course, you know, knowing that we'll never actually know, I think it's more or less about kind of the, you know, guy getting shot in the head at the table with his family and like the gore and the violence. To me, I think it's more of like symbolic that like things are cutting to black, like just like how kind of, you know, when we do die, you know, obviously not always, but if someone does get shot, for example, and does die, they don't really get to think about how they die. Like it's more, it kind of makes me think of the whole, we probably don't even hear when it happens.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, essentially them, you know, getting shot or getting killed. And so I think that really is connected with the series finale and kind of the cut to black. So, but it's less of really about Tony Soprano's specific death and more just about almost the audience experiencing that sudden cut to black. And I think that, you know, I guess it's kind of maybe a little bit too deep, but I think it's, you know, to me, the reason that I watch The Sopranos over and over again, I think the reason that I continue to watch, it's almost like we're trying to figure out some sort of puzzle. And like the more we watch, the more little, I don't know about you, but every single time I watch an episode or do like a full rewatch, I'll always pick up something new.
Yeah, you find something new. Yeah.
Episode. And so to me, it's almost like doing this rewatch is you know, this journey of learning more about yourself by through learning about them and kind of through experiencing things with them. But that kind of the cut to black at the end is more just about how, you know, everything comes to an end, which kind of, we hear that theme so much throughout, you know, throughout the series. But I guess I'm getting very into like the deep philosophical. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because at the table, when they're sitting there, AJ makes a comment about, you know, think of the good times and all that kind of thing. And that he talks about when Tony said that to him one time. And I go back to, I want to say, and I forget offhand what season it was in. I've tried to find it. And it was a really small quote, but there's a scene where Tony's talking to Melfi and he makes a comment that when his kids are grown and okay, he doesn't care what happens to him. Like if he gets thrown in jail, that's that, he's okay with it. And he makes a comment at the table between the AJ comment and then he mentions about Carlo, who's going to testify.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a conceivable to think that New York had believed, and they've gotten to the point where Tony was going to be severely hamstrung. Silvio was in a coma. Paulie Walnuts was just kind of a yes man that kind of went with the family and did what he was told. Bobby was dead. Pretty much everyone around Tony had crumbled. Tony's probably going to go away anyway. I think Tony probably left the restaurant. He had believed, you know what, my son's finally okay now. He's gotten through his demons. Meadow, she's met a man and she's going to get married and your Carmelo will be okay. And I think it's conceivable to think that Tony probably just went to prison. And we would have to imagine that Carlo Gervasi would have put him in pretty deep. I mean, he would have probably been the pussy type of informant that Sal Bombancero was, but I don't know. We'll never know. There have been some odd theories I've heard. Like I read in the Rolling Stones article about the film, the new movie, that I actually floated an idea that Carmela Soprano would take the family over. Did you hear about that?
So I read something about how she had filmed a scene, or she had been in a scene that ended up getting cut, which I kind of thought that sucked. Cause I'm like, if you're going to have Edie Falco come and, you know, do all this stuff, you're going to then cut her out. But anyway, I guess that was a side note, but I have actually myself a cup sort of semi theory with regard to Carmela and the series finale, but no, I didn't hear about her, the thing about her taking over the family. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that has never happened in the American mob ever. There's never been an individual, as far as a female, takeover or even be a part of the family. Now, in Italy, it's a different story. There are women bosses, there are real women bosses, and they've been talked about as good leaders. But I thought it was ridiculous. I think David Chase made a point that I don't think he even considered it. So it's kind of crazy to think about. But I do have a interesting theory. You know who I believe takes the family over? And I mean this. Like
Meadow? You might think,
no. Anthony Soprano Jr.
Really?
Yeah. I believe AJ was, because again, if it's not that, because when you look at someone like Carmine Jr., right? Little Carmine. Mm-hmm. Did he look like a boss?
He was smart, by the way, just for what it's worth.
No, he was smart.
Smart thing.
But I think it also would allude to the fact that this is the state of the mob. And that's truly the truth. The mob now is kind of pathetic in a way. They're not as respected as they once were. I don't think it's that hard to believe. I mean, AJ had, I know people hated him as a character. I didn't hate him. I thought he was every kid in America. I think that's how kids are. They think their parents are stupid and they do everything their parents, they don't do anything their parents tell them and do everything they don't tell them to do. So there were parts of the show, though, where AJ showed that I think he had the capability. And again, just because you're not an enforcer or beat people up, that doesn't mean you can't be in the mob. If you notice, AJ was starting to get into the porn business. He was probably doing stuff with Inga that probably wasn't all up and up. It was a mafia-backed film company. Let's just be honest. He was probably starting to hang around eventually with Carmine, Little Carmine. I don't think it's that hard to believe. Especially because he was the father. And we've seen in history, even if the show is truthful, we've saw people that weren't capable of taking over. John Gotti's son took over the family after he went to jail. He wasn't capable, but he did it anyway. I don't think it's that hard to believe. And remember when Anthony Jr. went after Corrado in the nursing home? Mm-hmm. He was literally going to go kill him. It didn't work, but it showed he had some balls.
Right. Although I do think for him, it was more like, well, I guess you could argue that this was a reason that a lot of them did certain things, but more of like, he felt like he kind of had to prove something. Like, I'm just thinking of the girl when he was like the girls that he went out with at the club, yeah. That when they went back to their friend's apartment and she was like, oh, well, you're going to do something, aren't you? And I almost think that it was more like him feeling like had to play a certain part. I don't think that he actually wanted to Sarah Jr. or had it in him. I think that's why he, kind of just like stopped and froze out of nowhere. Not that he was, scared of Jr., but just, the whole idea overwhelmed
even
him.
Even after the fact, like he, even when he was in the parking lot, he like stood up to Tony. He's like, you're just going to let him fucking get away with it? And like I thought he showed some balls at that point. And look, if you're going to call AJ soft, which he was, no one's going to say he wasn't. But I mean, Tony suffered from panic attacks. Tony had weak parts as well. Tony was a sociopath, obviously. And he was obviously, but he was someone that had emotional issues. He wasn't his son, but I don't think it's that hard to believe. Is AJ an enforcer? No, but I don't think it'd be out of the question to think that he could order something to happen, especially after his father dies the way he did. I mean, he would have got hard after that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And to be clear, I don't think that whether it's AJ feeling sad or Tony having emotional issues, like that's just they're just human. So just and just like how everyone we all as humans kind of have different emotions and different sides to us, but it's not something where we would want like one particular thing to define us. So yeah, I think there'd be no way for me to say, oh no, AJ wouldn't be capable of doing a certain thing, because I might think that, but there's really no way for me to know.
Most people hated him as a character. Did you hate him like a lot of
so
people?
I didn't. I mean, hate I feel like is a very strong,
like, give me a character you hate, and like did you dislike him as much as that character?
So I'd say he was probably one of my least favorite characters, but it wasn't, I liked him in season one and season six B better. Yeah. But at the same time, he was just a kid. I'm sure he was just acting as they directed him to act. So it's not like I don't think he was, I think he was just kind of, you know, doing what he was being told to do. But I guess I really didn't like when I felt like he was being really rude to Carmella, particularly in season five, when she and Tony were separated. I just felt like he was, you know, just being very mean to her. And with that said, like, I also wasn't an asshole to my parents at times when I was a teenager. Right. So, you know, it's not like I'm, I don't know. I just, it kind of, that bothered me a little bit when I felt like he was just kind of like purposely going out of his way to be mean. But, you know, it's also, he was a teenager.
Yeah. I think he was just like I said, I think he was every kid in America. And like anyone that said, well, I hated him. Well, you were probably just as big as an asshole as he was when he was a kid, but I thought he did a great job acting. I thought he was great. But you mentioned Meadow. I don't think it's out of the question to think that she obviously becomes a lawyer. She made many comments about she felt like Italians were persecuted. And, you know, she mentioned the poverty of the Mezzogiorno and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she'd always stick up for her family when, like, remember when Jackie dies? And
like some loyalty. She's like some
yeah,
loyalty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You actually sounded like her just there right now.
Really? Yeah. That's I take that as a compliment. I love Jamie Lynn Sigler. Yeah. She's awesome. So
she does a great, she did a great job, but I don't think it's out of the question to think she becomes like a mob lawyer. I don't, you know, and she's kind of like in on things. Like, I'm not saying she's Tom Hagen or something from The Godfather, but like, you know, she obviously was close with her family and she obviously would have saw what happened as well. And, you know, she was connected, I'm sure, with Patrick Parisi. So, yeah, I don't think it would be out of the question to think that she becomes like some sort of mob lawyer and, you know, she kind of handles things.
Oh, yeah, I could totally see that. I mean, even you hear, you know, Patrick talking about how they're trying to snag her at the firm and everything. Like, yeah. You can just kind of see it totally lining up. But what's interesting really about Meadow, or one of the things that's interesting, in the beginning, you know, like that college episode when they go on their little college tour, and then, you know, she asks her, are you in the mafia? And mm-hmm. she's kind of, you know, very skeptical and kind of suspicious of Tony, and kind of very, you know, of course, like anti-mafia. But then, you know, by the series finale, where they then have dinner again, it's like come full circle. And that's when she's, you know, telling him that she decided to go into law from the oppression and against, you know, Italian Americans. And so it's just interesting kind of how she makes that transition. But again, that's, you know, loyalty was very important to her.
She actually makes the point that she says all the times the FBI dragged you out of the house.
Uh-huh.
Like, she actually like alludes to the, like, she was sick of seeing that. And again, throughout the show, she talked about the persecution of Italians by the FBI. And even Tony did. I mean, remember when that Grosso guy like drops the...
Oh, yeah, Agent Grosso, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, why do you think they sent him, the stupid jerk? Because he has an Italian last name. And they went into like what it meant to be Italian. And that's ultimately why I believe that not only was Meadows somewhat involved after the fact, but I don't think it's out of the question to say AJ was as well. I mean, again, a lot of mobsters that become high level that have sons, it's not out of the question to think that they go into it as well. And in Italy, frankly, it's actually, they're the only person that can become boss. So if you have a son, he will be the boss, no matter if he wants to or not, or if he's capable or not, he becomes boss. So I don't think it's that hard to believe. Let me ask you, who did you feel like, so let's say you're correct and Tony did die. Who's running the family now? Who do you think was capable of that?
So, you know, I think, and that's one of the things that makes me also think that kind of the whole, you know, Tony either died or he went to jail.
Yeah, he was out of the picture. Let's just say.
Yeah, it was just like how he said 80% of the time it ends up, you end up, you know, in the can or on the embalming table at Cazzarelli's.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have to say if anyone, probably perhaps Patsy, because I think in this case, Polly would have gone over to New York. And I don't think that, you know, of course, obviously Silvio was in a coma. Christopher was dead. Bobby was dead.
I always found Patsy to be kind of a more of just like a tough guy. I never thought of him as like a leader. I guess I could see it. You know, it's interesting that you say Patsy, because the modern day New Jersey crime fantasy, the DeKalb Acanthes, which again, The Sopranos is loosely based off. The Sopranos is not based on any one group or person. So Tony is really, interestingly enough, a mixture of a couple different real characters. There are gangsters from the 60s that he's based off of, and then there's a gangster from the 90s, Vinny Ocean Palermo, that he's based off of. So they all have something, but it's interesting because the family in present day actually had a similar fate to the Soprano family, where they're now just kind of a couple of people. That's really all they are now. And that's kind of what happened to Patsy. Can I throw a name at you? And what do you think about this guy as a leader? Because I always found him to be quite a leader, and I felt like Tony was grooming him. Benny.
Oh, so that's a really interesting point. It's funny, when I first, you know, the first like few times I watched Sopranos, I wasn't too impressed by him. But the more I watched him, the more I got to know him, he was a really, 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 really good, loyal soldier. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? He got shit done. Like, I always think of when he went to the port and was beating up the guy about the Vespa scooters. And then he certainly took one for the team when Phil kicked his ass, and, you know, and he didn't give up Tony B's or Tony's whereabouts. I could see that, actually. I could see that.
Perhaps. I mean, he literally became like a chief hitman. Like, he became like, he was doing all the big hits. If you remember in season 4, he was getting like no-show jobs at the Esplanade. He was, he was moving. He was Tony's driver. I mean, he was starting to make a lot of moves, and then he just starts like doing scams with Christopher and those like Arab guys.
I mean, and then with Artie, which I hated when he did that to Artie. I was just like, no, man.
Yeah, with Martina, that Albanian woman.
I'm like, dude, you don't, I mean, you know, Artie's a personal friend of Tony's. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, it's like what he said, don't shit where you eat, and you definitely don't shit where I eat.
Well, and again, remember, like I said, he had been tasked with killing like important people. Like, he was in, he was the driver of the car when they shot Phil Leotardo. It was Benny and that guy Walden. Walden was the shooter, and Benny was the driver. So, I mean, Benny had by that point become a pretty important part. He was a made member of the family by that point. So it's not hard to believe that a decade or so later, if the show would still be going on, he could be in control of the family. Obviously, you know, Patsy would be in there as well, or other people. But yeah, it's just interesting to think about. Obviously, it's all fantasy. I mean, none of this show's real. But what is Carmela's fate, you think? She just kind of, do you think she gets remarried or anything?
So that was, thank you for reminding me of Carmela. So
does Vic Musto come back, maybe?
The wallpaper man.
Yeah.
or maybe she goes in.
That's true. Maybe she just goes to Italy and finds.
Meets and runs over Furia. So Carmela was interesting. I don't think that she would have any role whatsoever in like knowing that Tony's going to get set up for a hit or anything like that. But with that said, there were a lot of clues, and to me, a lot of tells that she was just by the end, like just ready to get the fuck out. In addition to, you know, of course, being worried forever about Tony getting killed or going to jail. In Kennedy and Heidi, there's this one part when Tony calls her to tell her that Christopher died, and she's like resting, and then she gets woken up by the phone, and you can see there's like an advertisement for like Panama City Beach real estate. And so that was, I was kind of like, well, you're thinking of like, you know, moving there. I don't think she would just be trying to invest in properties like remotely. Like, I'm pretty sure she was looking at, you know, a house because she wanted to go there. And then in the series finale, it showed her looking at the pamphlet of like beach houses in other areas. And so to me, it was just, those were just kind of two tells, like, oh, she, you know, she's getting ready to like leave. Like, she thinks, you know, either he's going to get hurt or he's going to end up in jail. I mean, certainly after Johnny Sack, when he did the allocution and got sentenced to 15 years, you know, I think Carmela knew it was just a matter of time. And so I think that she, I mean, maybe gets remarried. I think she just, would want to just be free. Just like how she kind of mentions to Vic when she goes and sees him at his store. She's like, maybe someday I'll be free.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, maybe. I don't know. She obviously had her fair share of, you know, close encounters or even affairs. I mean, she made out with Vic Moose, though, if we remember. So she
Right.
She had obviously a connection with Furio Junta. And remember, she had the connection with the guidance counselor as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. Mr. Wegler.
Robert Wegler.
That was so interesting. By the way, I there's one scene when Wegler and Carmela are at dinner, like the first time around, and he asked her if she's read Madame Bovary. Yeah. And the way that he like describes it, it makes me think of Carmela, but then it also makes me think of The Sopranos as a whole,
because yeah, he starts talking about it. That's a great point by you, actually.
Yeah, and it's somehow perfectly funny, though tragic. And that just made me, like, it always makes me think of literally of The Sopranos. And so I don't know if it's something where, you know, they put it on purpose. I feel like they, you know, I would think they would, or it's just a big coincidence, but it always reminds me of the show. And so, you know, I know most people don't like the guy, but I do appreciate that one comment that he made.
How about this? How about this for Carmela's fate? She remarries, but she marries Father Phil Intintola, who leaves the priesthood to marry Carmela.
Oh, that would be definitely
all the while trying to get a confession out of AJ, who's now the boss of the family, and he can never get a confession out of Tony. But instead of going to psychiatrist, now AJ is telling the secrets to the priest. Who's not?
Oh, wow. That is definitely, that would be an interesting, an interesting twist.
Yeah. So you think Paulie Walnut Scaltieri, you believe he goes to New York? Not hard to believe, I guess.
So I think I could see him going over to New York, or just kind of like, I don't know, kind of sort of not retiring, because I think he would get bored. But I think that he kind of made a deal with Butch. He was like, you know, I'm just going to go over with you guys, because, you know, when you think about it, at the end of the day, Paulie was really for Paulie, and that makes sense. You know, he wasn't married, never had kids. So he was always, you know, used to thinking about what was best for Paulie. And maybe with all the circumstances, he understandably could think, you know what, it's probably best for me to just go over with them. He was all about surviving, and just like what he said, you know, I survived the Columbia War by the skin of my balls. Like, he's always used to doing what it takes, what he needs to do to survive. And so I think he could have made a calculation that it's going to end up better for him in New York, especially after everyone's, you know, still in a coma, Bobby gets shot and killed. He probably figured if not, he would just be another target.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, I think one thing we learned about Paul Galtieri is that throughout the show, he had trouble. I mean, he was a good earner. I don't think he was anything special. Maybe he just kind of realized, you know what, I'm getting older. I'm going to do what I got to do now. And I'm getting a little worried about some of the people that are here now. I'm going to take my thing. I'm going to put this in motion. And, you know, but then again, I always go back to the whole thing of like, why kill Tony? I mean, he's going to go away anyway. Like, why not just wait it out and take over what's left? But it's fascinating to think about. I do want to kind of bring up, before we get into some favorite characters and things like that, I did want to quickly talk about some of the characters and their real life stories. I know many people have heard this before, but Tony Sirico, who plays Paulie Walnuts, actually was a real gangster at one point. I've talked about this before. He was very connected in the Colombo crime family. People said that knew Tony Sirico back in the day, that he was one of the best burglars they'd ever come across. He actually did time up at several state prisons in New York. He was arrested multiple times. I think by 1970, he'd been arrested about 30 times.
Yeah, I read that, like 28 or something like that.
Yeah, he was definitely someone that had connections. And I know that he joined the show under one condition.
They didn't have to be a rat.
Yeah. He's actually a great actor too. He's been in some really good films and some really good shows. He was in, you know, obviously he was in Goodfellas. Have you seen that? He was in the Gotti film, which was very good. But yeah, he was a real mobster at one point. Tony Darrow, who plays Larry Boy Baris, he was actually a real mobster at one point. In the late 2000s, he was arrested for extortion in a Gambino crime family case.
Oh my gosh.
He's always been kind of moved around. He was actually also in Goodfellas, as we know. He was that Sonny character, that Paul Servino's character takes his restaurant over. A couple other smaller characters. I don't know if you remember the scene where they have the homecoming party for Richie. There's a character, a fat guy. He has like a few lines. His name was Frank Cipollina in the show. He makes a comment about Richie, and Richie kind of just says something about how the envelope's probably light. That character was actually a real mobster as well. A guy called Michael Squisserini. He was a part of the New Jersey DeCavalcanti crime family. He was a debt collector, and he would actually, after the show, ultimately be convicted or be charged with murder after an individual saw him on the show. He wouldn't go to court, though. He would actually die a few months later of I think, heart attack, I believe. So,
My gosh. I remember, and Toodle fucking knew. I remember the guy, and that's where he was trying to show a picture of his grandkids, and Polly was like, please, no pictures. Don't exploit medical curiosity.
That's the guy you're talking about. Yes. Great calls. Wow. You do know the show. Great call. Also, one other one, Richard Muldoon. He actually played Albert Grease.
He was so funny.
Yeah, the parakeet, as many said. He was actually involved after the show in a drug dealing ring out on Staten Island. He was selling steroids, I believe. So a couple life imitating art situations. And weirdly enough, Larry and Albert Burris were both arrested off the record for mob related crimes. So,
oh my God. Well, it's funny because it's like, you know, maybe that's part of what, you know, made The Sopranos appealing for people who had, you know, not been involved, exactly. And so I think that, you know, it's, you know, life imitates art, art imitates life, but I think it was, yeah, it just goes to show.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, they did a really good job of kind of typecasting, getting the right people. Let me ask you, I want to kind of go through, can I go through my worst small role characters and see if you agree?
Sure. Okay. Sure.
The worst character in the show, in my opinion, big character, small character, Noah Tannenbaum.
I did not like Noah Tannenbaum.
I mean, did anyone find him to be a good character? I mean, he was dreadful.
I mean, I guess he was good for at being dreadful, I guess. But I mean, yeah, he was everything he did. I mean, the one thing that I always remember most that it was so contradictory is Meadow was like, oh, he keeps his opinions to himself because he's a sensitive person. Meanwhile, like 2 minutes earlier, Noah just said, I would have punched his fucking lights out. Yeah, exactly. Like about to, I'm like, really? He keeps his opinions to himself.
Yeah. On the same level, they actually knew each other. The character Caitlin, I hated that character.
Oh, yeah. So you weren't into the whole college dorm situation.
No, she was so annoying. Like, she just was just annoying and lame, and just her voice annoyed me. She was always in the way. She seemed like a major cock block from Meadow's standpoint. She was always like helpless and needy, and like she shouldn't have been in New York. It's just that simple. Like, she's just annoying. She should have been back to Oklahoma or up to the French mountains with those people that she went.
The psychiatrist. Yeah.
Like, she was just annoying. This is one of the worst characters, Eric Scatino.
Oh,
I felt bad for him, but he was an annoying character.
I agree. I think Eric Scatino, which, by the way, Happy Wander is one of my favorite
episodes. It's one of the best episodes of the show. Agreed.
It's so, whenever I think of him, I just think of them playing the song, and it's like so, like, it's so
you
bad.
Are sunlight and my moon. Yeah, it's annoying.
And it's funny because I know that Jamie was actually in drama. So I know they obviously, you know, they had her purposefully sing badly. I think she's actually probably really, really good singer. But I wasn't too into Eric Scatino, although I like his father. I thought was a good character.
No, it was weird because his father, on the other hand, was a great character. Like he just the way he dressed, like those like goofy, like boots that he wore with like those pants with like his shirt tucked in, like, I don't know, he just
It was realistic. You're like, oh, I saw that person the other day. Like, because you can just see him. Like,
his... That was a wild move, though, for Tony to give her his car. Like, that was a wild.
That was, yeah. That was one of the times where I was like, okay, do you, like, he know, and he knows how smart Meadow is. He knows how astute and how much she notices things. Like, does he really think she's not going to notice that and or not care?
It's so funny. She just goes, this is Eric Sagatino's Jeep. But Carmela just goes, oh my God, this is not Eric's. Please tell us it's not Eric Sagatino's Jeep.
Right. It's like, so it's like, oh, really? Like,
it's just so wild that he did that. Like, it was.
Yeah. That was one thing that I think that, you know, he really, I think just, I mean, obviously he does a lot of things on impulse, but I feel like with this, it was just, he was just, I don't know, like, I don't know if his wires and his brain were crossed, but like, there was just no good outcome to that. And I know that he, you know, messes around with other people, but I'm like, with Meadow, like, come on.
Yeah. I feel like she would have known, especially they were friends too. Like they were like, kind of like almost dating, I feel
they
like.
They were almost, yeah, they were almost like, you know, kind of like, oh, sort of maybe, you know, I don't think it was like serious, but they, yeah, I think like they kind of had a crush on each other or whatever.
Yep. A couple others. This is a pretty minor character, but he played like a huge douchebag and he was just a complete dickhead. Ernan, do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. AJ's buddy, that, like, the one who just used him.
Guy? Yeah.
They just totally used him just to like pay the tab, and the guys, yeah, they wanted to like get in cool with his dad when it was like, tell your dad I said hi.
Yeah, like, Hernan. Yeah, and he like, it's just annoying, and it's weird because the character that plays him, Vincent Piazza, is actually like an unbelievable actor. He played Lucky Luciano in Boardwalk Empire. He's incredible. But that was like one of his early roles. He was just super like the club douchebag that like acted like he had money but didn't have any money and just used AJ.
I know.
Couple others. Russ Fogoli, Dr.
Do you believe that he's
Paulie's father?
Paulie's dad?
Yeah, I have heard that.
I do too.
I have heard that theory. And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you remember, Paulie finds out that Maria Nucci Gualtieri is not his mother and that his aunt is actually his mom, the nun. And she tells him on her deathbed that she had intercourse with an individual called Russ. And he was in like the military, and it just ultimately shook out kind of weird. So.
Yeah. And just all the different kind of things that they had.
Did David Chase ever bring that up or no?
I don't think he ever officially confirmed it. I think that might be one of the David Chase, I'm never going to really tell you the answer sort of things, yeah. But like, you know, just kind of imagine it or figure it out for yourself. But I don't think that was an accident. I think it at the very least was done to make us consider it.
Well, yeah, they did. I don't, have you seen The Wire or no?
So I have not. I know that that's a show that I really need to watch. For some reason, I had a little bit of trouble getting into it, but okay. with Michael Williams' recent passing, yeah. I've kind of been wanting to get into it again and give it a try just from reading about
I would him. Definitely recommend. The reason I bring that up is in season four, they take a look at the public school system and we meet like these four young kids. And one of the characters, it's often been wondered that he may have been the son of a character that we know throughout the show. And David Simon has mentioned at certain points that it might be true, but it's kind of the same situation. But yeah, I would highly recommend watching it. A few more. Massive Genius. Holy hell, he was a terrible character.
It's I know that a hit is a hit is one of the, you know, tends to be
the worst.
Lower down on people's lists, which, you know, it's definitely not one of my favorites. Although there are a couple little things that I think were funny from it, like Tony's golf outing with the guys, with the Dr. Cusimano and
those characters
and his buddies as well. They were cringy, but it was funny that how he fucked with Dr. Cusimano at Dan when he brought up the box and asked him to hold on to it for a little while.
Yeah. I always got a kick out of him like screwing around with Cusimano.
Me too. And then the guy was asking if he knew John Gotti.
Yeah.
That's when he just decided
and
to
he
like,
talks about the ice cream.
The
shop.
Bungalow bar. Yeah. Which if you notice actually in the trailer, one of the or both of the trailers actually to Many Saints, it shows Tony in an ice cream truck. I don't
really?
Yeah, so I don't think it had anything to do with John Gotti. Or I mean, I guess there's the chance, but I think it was just like they were hijacking like one of the button of our trucks. But yeah, I'll send you a video actually that I kind of took of it where I like put them together.
I gotta see that. I never thought about that.
Yeah, and it could be completely unrelated, as I guess, you know, most things that I see that are connections on this brand could very well be unrelated, but it's one of those things where it made me think twice about it.
Johnny Cakes.
He died. The actor died by suicide in real life, which is really sad. Same with Barbara's husband on the show.
Oh, really? I didn't know that either.
Wow. Yeah, it was very sad.
I didn't know that. I feel bad for bringing it up. I guess.
It's okay.
I hated the Vito storyline. I just thought it was drawn out way too long. It's one of the things about the show that I think it was slightly overdone. It was too long. And then like the thought that Tony gave to like actually letting it be okay, like that never would happen in real life. And like Johnny Cakes always kind of seemed like really rigid to me. Like he never really seemed like he even like liked Vito. Like, I don't know. Like,
I feel like
Vito sexually. I don't know.
I think part of it was, you know, kind of like the edge, like, you know, like the edginess. Like he was, you know, different from like most guys that I'm sure.
Johnny, yeah.
That he had met. But
seems like he'd make a mean pancake though. So one other one, Richard LaPenna.
Melfi's ex.
That guy, the son for that matter as well, Jason, he was pretty annoying as well.
I never liked when they're on the beginning, like the first season when they're all at therapy together, and then the guy, the other, like even the therapist is like laughing about mafia, like he's making like mafia psychiatry jokes, and I think that Richard almost, he reminded me almost a little bit of like Carmella's mom, and that like they were embarrassed
he was always
for being Italian
over everyone else.
Like trying to like so worried about, you know, stereotypes when you know that he was like almost internalized prejudice.
But it was funny too because this kid like called him out one time. He's like, didn't the group that you belong to get founded by Joe Colombo, a mobster?
And right, exactly. Yeah, and then also saying how like, you know, mafias are just as, you know, kind of about American culture now as Westerns, like,
yes,
you
know. Exactly. Great point. We'll do two more questions, then we'll get some trivia, and then we'll get out of here. Let me ask you, were there any characters you didn't like or some characters you loved? You know, minor characters?
Yeah, so in terms of favorite characters, it's always nearly impossible for me to say. So I'll just kind of kind of name off a few that I really liked. In terms of for the on the guy side, I really, really liked Ralph. Not liked in the sense of I approved of everything he did. I think his character as a whole was fascinating. So it's just one person that sticks out.
I think he's a guy that was obviously very odd for sure, but I think that's the thing about the mob. And I think the thing about him that I liked is he was a great earner. He was willing to kill people and he had an edgy side. And I think the show needed that. Like there were some guys that were just very blasé and they were mobsters and that was it. He had like some interest to him, obviously his weird kinks and like his relationship with Janice. It was just kind of weird. And
right. And even towards the end, like in the episode that he died, whoever did this, I think he also showed a lot of humanity. Like even at the same time as obviously he had done all these like horrible things. I think that, you know, seeing him really upset when his kid got hurt and just, you know, kind of wondering like, oh, would he have actually done, you know, gotten any better? And I mean, I personally think that he didn't. That he wasn't behind the fire that killed Pio Mai, but I guess it's a whole other subject. But I think part of me is just, you know, sad that it had to all.
I mean, one of the great storylines in the show is the weight joke that he makes about Ginny. I think one of the funniest scenes in the show is when John walks into the clubhouse with Carmine. He's like, "I want you to sanction a hit on Ralph Cifaretto."
Oh, yeah, and Carmine just sitting there sipping his tea.
Yeah, and he goes, "Ralph slept with Ginny?"
Oh, yeah. That was,
It's just so funny. He's like,
Carmine was so good at that, at just like,
yeah, not laughing, but like saying funny shit. And then he makes a comment about He goes, I'll tax him. I'll charge him a lot.
I'll crack him good. I'll ask for 200,000.
Yeah, and then he goes, what's this? Is she just about money? And then he just goes, what's next? Call money gets the fucker for $1 million.
And then he's Ralph wants to watch me. It was too fun. Yeah. And then with Carmine just kind of sitting there, like
casually sipping
on his, it was, yeah, that actually was, episode is great. I actually just the last episode trivia I created was on the weight episode.
Oh, I got to do that one because it's actually one of my favorite episodes. I will say John. If you ask me like who my favorite character in the entire show was, I would say Johnny Sack. I think his behavior late in the show with like the admitting to the thing and everything like that bothered me. And you know, I thought we saw like a human side of him because I always thought he was pretty like violent and dangerous, frankly. He always played a good mobster to me, I thought. And like the shit with his daughter, like I don't know, I think he was just kind of overcome with this like sorrow that, like, I think he loved his kids obviously, and I thought the FBI treated him a little poorly in that situation, like at least let him see them leave or something. But
yeah, I mean, I kind of wish, you know, at that point when he was just standing there and they were all walking out of the wedding, I'm like, really, they couldn't just like wait another 2 minutes just so at least like, you know, his daughter and her husband could drive off and not have to like see all of that. But I think, you know, also he loved his wife, he loved his family. So mm-hmm. I think that in many ways, you know, and he was also one of the only guys that, you know, didn't have a Gumar.
I always found that was one of my favorite things about him. Like I think he had like a side to him that like I respected a lot. Like he also makes the comment to Tony about like how he knows that like he sees other people's wives and what they look like, but like to him, like Ginny's beautiful. And like, he, like, I don't know. I found it to be like kind of sweet.
It was very, very, it really stood out, especially for, you know, as opposed to the others who, you know, Tony had a new girlfriend every few months. And, mm-hmm. and I think it showed that, yeah, I think that's why he took the plea, because, you know, being in jail for 15 years, while it would be hard, you know, if he risked going to trial, I mean, who knows, he could have been put away for the rest of his life. I mean, obviously he tragically dies soon after, but I think he really did, you know, care about his family at home.
I think he was trying to say like, I'll plead and like, I just don't take everything from Ginny, you know, and I'll at least give her something, you know. And you know, I guess that's honorable in a way. He didn't inform or anything, so I think that's fair. Who else? Who else did you like?
So I really, really liked what's it called? No, not Tony. Still, I was gonna say Tony, but then I'm like, everyone loves Tony.
Yeah, everyone.
I think that, you know, Silvio, I think he's just a great consigliere. And I admire him as a person. I actually just downloaded his new book that came out today, Unrequited Infatuations. In terms of like the person who was one of my favorites when I first watched, it was Polly, because I just thought he was hilarious. And you know, besides that, I really, really loved Livia's character. Like, she was so horrible, but it was Nancy Marchand was so just amazing at playing the role of Tony's mother. Junior, I think he had some of the best like quotes.
Very funny
on the entire show. I mean, the Barisi brothers, actually, it's funny. And I wouldn't say they were like overall favorites, because you know they weren't in that much in the show. But I really liked some of the scenes that they were in, like with Albert and Richie, with the he's in no shape to go into the unknown, not knowing. And then with Larry Barisi's conversation with Livia about his mom throwing a jar of artichokes at him. I think they just, I enjoyed their sense of humor. You know, I guess, you know, of course, it's, I really enjoy, you know, nearly all of them, like Christopher, Adriana. I think that they all kind of, in their own way, contributed to making it, you know, really the show that it was. Carmela as well, Meadow. There are many characters that I don't like.
Larry Boy Brees had a great line at one point where he says, if I ever see that prison doctor again, I'm going to say, hey, fuckstick, did I ever show you these in medical school? They're called balls.
Oh, yeah. Well, that same one was when he said the Romans had a word for him, the asshole. Yeah. Yeah. When Ray. Oh, I didn't like Ray, but that was just because he was obviously, you know, which is really interesting.
Real quick, couple small characters that were very good. That Carter character, the guy with Junior at the Nut House, his associate.
Oh, he was amazing.
That Chinese guy. He was so funny good. As hell, that character.
Yeah. Oh, I also really liked that little Carmine. I thought he did a really great job at you know, the role he was given, kind of the malapropes. Of course, he executed them very effectively and made them hilarious. And I liked Phil too. I mean, I like a bunch of them.
There's a Phil Twitter account going. I don't know if you've seen it, but the guy that does it is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think there are like a couple, but yeah, I've followed both of them for a while, and likewise, and they're both very, you know, whomever, which one is the official one, which there was not, they're both really funny, and I like engaging with them. They play the Phil role very well.
They definitely do. Two other small role characters that were small roles, but they were funny. Little Bobby, I thought he was a pretty funny character. I think he had some pretty funny lines, frankly. Even late in the show about, like, I hate the fucking Giants. He says that. They're watching, like, football.
Oh, yeah. And then, and Kaisha at the end, he's, like, watching Casablanca on the TV.
I always thought he was kind of a cool character. I thought he was, like, a good kid, it seemed like. And, you know, we had some weird, like, some of the sons in the show were weird. Like, obviously, little Vito and even AJ, for that matter. Also, Uncle Pat, I thought he was a pretty good character.
He was really, really interesting. It's funny because I once kind of noticed a kind of parallel between Uncle Pat and Eugene.
Yeah.
In the sense of Uncle Pat, you know, they let him retire, because he had the hiccups and he was able to kind of retire and start over. Whereas with Eugene, obviously he wasn't. But when Christopher was explaining this to Adriana, he was like, why are you laughing? Like, he almost committed suicide, like, from talking about when he had his like hiccup thing. And so it was just interesting. It was like, oh, well, he almost committed suicide. Then he was able to retire and go away, so he was fine. Whereas Eugene, it was like the opposite.
Yeah, that's actually true. I never thought about that, but it actually has some truth. I mean, they're kind of the same person. That's actually a pretty good point. Let me ask you, someone asked me a question on Twitter this. What would you answer? You have to be stuck in a car for an eight-hour road trip with either Noah Tannenbaum or Min Matrone. Who do you pick? I'd probably go Min, just because I feel like he has okay stories, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like with Min, like, it would be a tolerable level of, like, kind of, you know, irritation. Yeah, you just listen to her, like, just talk about herself. Like, but with Noah, like, who knows? He'd probably, like, you know, get irritated with me and try to, like call the police and take out a restraining order or something. Like, he's just very wacky and did weird shit.
Also, a lot of people won't remember this, but we truly have to think about how Vito Spadafore may have been maybe one of the worst overall slime balls in the entire show. I mean, he made some pretty disgusting moves as far as, like, he tried to screw Carmel out of the money with Tony maybe not waking up. And it just is overall, like, he tried to get with Adriana when Christopher goes to rehab. Like, he was just kind of a slimy guy at the end of the day.
Right. Well, I don't even think he maybe even necessarily was, like, trying to get with Adriana. Maybe she was just trying to, like, I don't know, get information. But when he was trying to get it with Finn, when he did all that stuff, when they were in the hospital, like when Tony was in the coma and he was like trying to touch him and stuff.
Weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was, you know, a good dad though. I think he did care about his family, but yeah, I think, he couldn't stay out of the life. Which is why he, you know, turned back home and went back to home to New Jersey.
Do you know, I don't know if you know this, but do you know that his story is actually very much based on real events, like his character?
I had read something about that before, but I...
So there was a mob boss in New Jersey called John D'Amato. He was actually he was actually a swinger with his wife, and they were seen in a bisexual club. And she talked about they had transgressions with other men because they got into a fight, and she ran to the rest of the family, and he was actually killed over it.
I think
Vito, the real character, will tell you that. Let's do some trivia and let's get out of here, because we could probably talk for hours about this show. Probably one of the only ones we could do that with. Let me ask you a couple of trivia questions, see how good you are. How many Jasons were there in the show?
Ooh, let's see. Can we do multiple choice?
Yes. I'll give you four options.
Okay.
2, 3, 6, or 8?
2, 3, 6, or 8. Let's see.
This is a tough one. I'll actually give you them after the fact.
Let me see. 2, 3, 6, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with my gut and say 8, just because I know there were a lot of.
You were dead on the money. And here, these are the 8. Jason Parisi, who was Patsy's son. He was the Rutgers student. Jason Gervasi, obviously, which was Carlo's son. He was also friends with Jason Parisi.
Right. The dude Tony wanted AJ to hang out with more.
Correct. Jason Molinaro. He was part of the he was an associate for the family. He was played by William DeMeo. I'm sure if you've seen him, you would know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
Jason Masucci, he was a smaller character. He was actually the guy that was with Phil when they shook down Christopher's mom with the Walkman.
Oh, yeah. And he was like, it's Phil, it's the kid's mom. Yeah, it's the kid's mom. It's the kid's
mom. That guy was called Jason. Jason Barone, we obviously know about him. He was.
Oh, yeah. Do you even know what your Evan is?
Yes. That was Dick's son. He was the rower or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Jason, he was Lorraine Coluzzo's lover.
Oh, yeah. Jason, men are talking here.
Yes. Jason Evanina was his name. There was also Jason Melfi, that goofy park ranger wannabe.
The one with the forestry service. Yeah.
Yep. And the final Jason was Tony B's son, one of the twins.
Oh, they were so. I loved it when they made the little comment about pins from the 96 Olympics in Atlanta. It looks like when Tony B found they had taken the pins from AJ's closet.
Yeah, and he like has everything and we have nothing. They made those comments.
Yeah, it was very touching.
Remember, there was a nice little scene also when he's doing like the massage parlor and they like hit the sledgehammer. It was a kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, it was like he wanted to connect with them so bad. It was just, yeah.
Yeah, and he just couldn't. So they started taking hints. Where in Italy was Tony's family from? What town?
Avellino.
Very good. Right outside of Naples. Tony was Napolitan. Okay, what college did Melfi's son, Jason, go to?
Bard.
Yeah, I think I gave you this one already, didn't I? What was Bobby Jr.'s AOL screen name?
So give me multiple choice here, because it's like in my, I can see the picture in my head, but like it's, right. If I could have multiple choice.
All right. Builder Bobby.
Uh-huh.
Power Bob. Rising Damp or Truck Fan 240?
I'm going to take a guess here because I remember it. Rising Damp. Was that it?
No, that was actually Jana.
Oh, no.
Jana said that to him. Her name was Vlad 666.
Oh!
No, his name was Power Bob. That was his screen name.
Wait, so then who was Rising Damp? Was that someone's, or am I just like going
No,
crazy?
Rising Damp is what she says to him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Whatever that means.
I was like, where did I get Rising Damp from?
Yes. Artie refers to a drink Benny should have at Vesuvio. What was
Martina.
It called? Yeah, and what was it based on?
It goes down really easy. It's based on Martina from the restaurant.
Yeah, and it was a martini that was from Albania.
Right, where they go down easy.
Yes. This is a tough one. If you get this, you're good to go. And if you're answering this yourself in the audience, you're good. Fat Dom Gamiello was killed before going to his daughter's, which was where, and quote, who tanked again as he read the paper at the Satrials? Where did he go? Where did his daughter live? She lived in New Jersey in a certain town that he says And he also references that a team tanks again. Who was that team?
So the team, I'm going to guess that it's the, it's either the Yankees or the Mets.
No, it was
no
Syracuse. They tanked again.
Ah, damn.
What city get in that New one. Jersey? Do you know offhand?
So I don't know which city, but what I do know, if I could kind of gain back some points here, is I know that just as Fat Dom was last seen in New Jersey, so was the Hindenburg. But we still don't know, but that doesn't have to do with anything.
I remember that thing. He was going to Metuchen.
Oh.
Which is a town in Jersey, not far from Rutgers.
See, this is where my lack of having come from New Jersey is where clearly I know where my blind spots are now with the Sopranos trivia. I need to work on my New Jersey geography.
One other one. This is a good geography. Where was Danielle from, the FBI?
Whippany. Danielle from Whippany. She drowned in a picnic. Apparently, yeah. Cause which is always sounds so hilarious to me because I'm like, who drowned in a picnic? Like it was like,
oh yeah, she's dead.
That was just so, and I mean, can you imagine though how like crazy Adriana must have felt when she heard that? That was like, it's like coming back to haunt, like Danielle's coming back to haunt her. But in Whippany.
Oh, did you also notice that Vito was three different characters in the show?
I know he was the different character in season one, episode eight.
He was Gino.
Gino. And then was he, I know he went to install the Beansy's ramp, but was he a different character at that point?
I don't know what his name was at that point, but he was in the show. And he also was involved with obviously that, but he was in the hospital room when
right, and another toothpick.
Yeah, when Mustang Sally beats up Brian.
Oh, I hated that. I hated Mustang Sally. That was
I had him on my list as well.
Oh, it was just that was just so uncalled for.
Yeah, he actually he was actually in Donnie Brasco. He actually passed away pretty recently as well. That actor.
Yeah, it's sad when see a lot of them. A lot of the actors,
and they get older, and then they just kind of, I don't know if you've seen Tony Sirico. I mean, he's old now. I mean, he's in his 80s, I think.
Yeah. Well, and also, Dominic Keaney's and also Hesh, they're both in their 90s.
Yeah. I'll leave you with this. And then we'll kind of do some plugs and get out of here. I wanted to tell you the story because I think you'll appreciate it. So I have a show that I haven't put out yet. I interviewed a guy. He was actually worked for the FBI. He was undercover. He worked with the Gambino crime family, all these different families, did all sorts of undercover work. He told me a story, and I think you'll appreciate this. So he was working undercover for this guy called Greg DePalma. Greg DePalma was a capo and a higher up in the Gambino family. And he was Greg's driver. He was doing a lot of stuff for Greg DePalma in the 2000s. And there was a situation one night where anytime Greg would call him, he would have to answer because he didn't want to feel like he would get outed or Greg would wonder who he was. So one night he's sleeping, he gets a call at 4 a.m. and Greg calls him and says, hey, this guy was giving Greg and these different mobsters TVs, flat screen TVs. And he calls him one night and says, hey, that TV you gave the boss, was that stolen? And he goes, yeah, of course it was stolen. He's like, I didn't go out and buy him a TV. Like it was stolen, of course. And Greg DePalma says to him, well, listen, we're a little worried because the boss was watching that damn Sopranos show and saw the episode with Feach LaManna. And he's worried about this TV. So he said, tomorrow morning, you better be there bright and early to take, quote, that fucking TV off the wall and get it out of here.
Oh, my gosh.
He was so worried because he thought Sopranos was legitimate and that TV might get him jammed up. So he made this FBI agent undercover go over and take the TV off the wall and get it out of his house.
Wow. I mean, hey, listen, if someone, knows that they're being, watched, that someone just, would be happy to see them back in jail, I guess, you gotta.
Yeah, you got to be careful. I guess life imitates art. Stephanie Rosendorf Diaz, you're great. By the way, how'd you get on the Talking Sopranos thing? That was awesome. How'd you get on that?
So they had this little super fan contest where people could submit like a 150 word entry about why they're a super fan and why they think they should be on the show. And so I did that, and then I was contacted by the producer and one of the finalists, and did another interview with him. And then I and seven other people were then selected as super fans, and we were able to then do a little podcast interview with Steve and Michael. And then he kind of, I think, yeah, they did it. We did it all in one day. And then they put it all into the one episode that came out a couple weeks ago, but we recorded back earlier in the summer.
I watched it. It was good stuff. I actually like that show. Those guys are super nice and good people. And I like seeing them. Check Stephanie out. You can check out her blog, sopranosblueprint.com. She actually does some great Sopranos trivia. I wish we had more time, because I would actually ask you to ask me some trivia questions, because I feel like I maybe would get some of them right. But I'm going to have to go check out some of those trivia things. Check that out, sopranosblueprint.com. You have to let us know what you think of the film. Are you going to watch it like right at midnight when it comes out? Are you going to go to the theaters? How are you going to watch it?
So we're going to watch it at home. I probably going to end up watching it at midnight, just because I feel like I probably won't be able to sleep, like knowing that it's out there.
Yeah, and you don't want anyone to spoil it, right?
Like, right. Well, and that's what, fortunately, people that are, because I, you know, talk to a ton of people that are in the UK, because there are a ton of Sopranos fans there, and I've been lucky enough to not run into any real spoilers. So, you know, I appreciate everyone who's kind of keeping it quiet thus far. But yeah, I'm gonna be watching it at home, and like super excited. We'll have to catch up on that afterward.
Well, enjoy the film. It was great talking. Like I said, we could probably do this for another 4 hours. There's no show probably in America in history that we could talk this long about. It is a great work of art, and we're glad that we had it. I can't wait for the film. Steph, thanks for coming on. Maybe we'll have you come on down the road, and maybe you can watch The Wire and come on and talk about what your thoughts on that, because I think you'll be quite addicted to it like you are with Sopranos. But thanks for coming on. Thanks for spending some time with me tonight.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. As always, appreciate you guys for listening. As always, check us out on Twitter at TheSitDown7. You can check out all of our episodes wherever you get your podcast. So if you're listening on iTunes or wherever, maybe if you know someone that might like it, let them know about the show. Next week, we'll be back. We got a huge episode. We're going to do Lucky Luciano. It's going to be a gigantic one, so make sure you join us. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy the film. We'll see you next week here on The Sit Down.